come to our lovely website. Why I don't see your screen?
I'm hiding mine. I have it on the big screen, that's why.
Ah, makes sense, yes. Do you control it with a mouse right now?
Yes, I'm looking at my screen right now.
Okay, yes, sure.
Go.
Actually, not even that big lag, to be honest.
No, it's very nice.
Yeah. Lovely.
Quite lovely.
Well, that means that our long-term dream of podcasting through VR actually is going to come through.
No, for real. I think we can make this into a thing for sure. Copy. Fuck. One minute. I don't have time to do more of this shit. Alright, here we go. Here we go. I need to go live on Twitch. Hello and welcome to the Research VR podcast. We're back. Yay. High five. Nice. For the first time in VR, actually, we're not using a real set anymore. We're using a virtual one in something called Big Screen. Whoa, I'm moving the camera. Put the camera back where it was. I am your host, Oz Balabanian. This is Peter Lekoff.
Hello.
I'm the guy with the fro, usually, in Big Screen. we're doing something a little bit different today. We're in VR. The podcast is not just... We are in a campfire kind of cool environment. You can hear the crickets in the back in a forest and a nice fire. I don't know. I thought it was a nice scene. We have on the big screen the articles and the videos and the things that we want to talk about. So I thought having this in VR would be the perfect way to kind of set a really nice podcasting environment. Don't you think, Peter?
I honestly think this is one of the most brilliant ideas you ever came up with, because
it's pretty cool.
A long-term dream.
That's working. Right. That's right. We eventually we're gonna want to have like guests in here and invite people from all around. So this is what it looks like. We can show you the whole environment. I'm just grabbing the camera and panning it around. Eventually, when Big Screen, I think, has plans on making the rooms bigger, we want to have audience members also sitting inside a Big Screen, like watching the podcast happen. I think that'll be really neat.
It is.
Yeah. We are live on Twitch, on Facebook. Oh, I don't think we're live on Twitter yet. Let's do that. Boom. Now we are live on the tweeters. If you have questions and comments and whatnot, drop them down below. We'll be doing our best. Peter, maybe you can be in charge of that. I'm just kind of reading, having comments and questions. We're going to go through the news today of what it's like. All the SIGGRAPH news, all the kind of science news that we've seen around VR. There was a lot announced at SIGGRAPH that I think we want people to see. Let's fix the camera a little bit again. So, and at the end of the podcast, we'll talk a little bit about some housekeeping things. Right, Peter? We'll talk a little bit about my trip.
We have a lot of things.
We've been away for a little bit, so... it's nice that we're finally back doing more podcasts together, and let's do this thing. So I want to
absolutely.
I want to start with Neurable, which I think this was a big story that came out of SIGGRAPH. Neurable is a company that's doing a BCI attachment to VR. So the headline here is SIGGRAPH, Neurable lets you control a virtual world with your mind. And so Ian Hamilton was writing this. We can see a little clip of it in action back here. Have you seen this, Peter?
Definitely checked the articles on it, because to be honest, I'm usually quite skeptical regards BCI, because it's just not much. Yeah, I mean, look, it's definitely awesome for impaired people, at least what I used to think, right? But, you know, getting someone who is super healthy be very effective with a BCI was, in my scientific understanding, just super hard, because you don't get much information per second out of a brain. But here it seems you can do a lot of magic things.
There are magic things happening. For people that don't know what BCIs are, it's a brain-computer interface. So basically, instead of using touch or keyboard and mouse, you can actually wear something and think about, think about what you want to do. And basically, that's what they were demonstrating here, is that they had a room that you can kind of go through, and you can think about what object to pick up, and then you force raise it, and then you can think about the enemy that you want to hit, and it goes and hits that.
Yep.
Peter, there's also
important part.
What's up?
Yes.
I was going to say
the important part are those electrodes. Exactly.
Right. Actually, and these are dry electrodes,
dry
right?
Electrode. Yes.
Okay.
So maybe you have one of our audience, you know, been ever to a hospital and they had to put some weird jelly on your head. Here you actually don't need it. So it's some kind of combination of very interesting materials like gold that are very hard pressed against your head.
Right.
And then also sophisticated algorithms to clean out the noise.
Let's reload that. I want to look at the thumbnail again. I think you can see it pretty clearly here.
Yes.
Let's zoom in on that. Blue, blue, blue. Whoa. Uh-oh.
No.
My computer can't handle it. Click? I don't. You can't control my computer. Not
okay,
yet.
Good. Good.
So here's the thing. They had two versions, actually, or where one actually still had a eye tracker in there as well to help you make the selection of the place.
Whoa.
Yeah, that's really neat. I thought that was really cool. And from the article, from what Ian was saying, it worked really well in terms of like selecting multiple things and then firing them at an enemy. And it seems like there's some, you know, there's going to be a lot in this direction in VR going forward. I think, you know, with eye tracking being one step towards BCIs, full-on BCIs can definitely be an interesting solution.
Well, the question is how much training prior, you know, to the experience you need, and then the costs. Because I'm pretty sure that the eye tracker can be, if mass production, very cheap. But you saw even with the Motive, you know, the prices weren't as cheap as, you know, you would usually expect for something that just controls an additional feature in your game. So
true.
It's definitely promising, but I'm really skeptical whether it will be, you know, in the next 2-3 years, be mass market ready.
You think
but
so?
It's definitely awesome that they managed.
I think they were saying 5 years is their predictions.
It's a good estimate.
Estimate. I haven't seen enough, you know, done in terms of BCIs and headsets. I know people have used Emotive, which is a kind of a lower end. I wouldn't even call it a BCI, right? It's like a 3-channel or 4-channel.
No. They have multiple versions. They have the 3-channel one and the 16 one.
Oh, okay.
So with the 16-channel one, we actually benchmarked it in a lab where I worked, and we tested it with an Oculus DK2, I think. We measured how much noise it creates, so the headset compared to your brain. Mm-hmm. And in fact, it did not induce any noise that would distract the brain activity to be measured. So,
with
the 16 channels, you can do a lot of things. However, there is a sampling rate. The sampling rate is very low for the Emotive, and that limits your precision, let's say.
Mm.
How to do, you know, quotes.
Yeah,
quotes,
trying to do fingers. Quotes. Precision.
Yeah,
precision.
To do quotes. Yes.
Like this. Precision. It is an EEG, correct? The Emotive and the Neurable, yes.
Definitely.
So, cool. Let's move on to the next going on? Hold on. What's going on? Should we talk about this? We'll come back to this. We'll come back to the story.
Yeah, we come back to it. This one is interesting.
Right. We're talking about controllers and inputs. So this controller, here, let me switch so people can see the main. There we go. This controller changes shape to match virtual objects. Let's take a look. So it seems like they have this.
There's so many nasty thoughts.
It is kind of weird. You can see it hardening and softening, and basically it's kind of like a variable variable controller. And did you notice that they have a vibe tracker at the end of it?
Yes. It's astonishing.
That's just beautiful.
I mean, if it helps you to grasp the virtual reality, and it's not very, you know, costly, why not?
Why not? I'm a big fan of the tactical inputs, haptical tactics.
Right? Yes.
Is it haptical? Yes. Haptical tactics. In terms of kind of, it has a little bit of real haptics that you can feel the weight of objects as you grab them and move them around in VR. So, which are really neat. This is from the Cornell University. They call it the shape shifting controller. And I didn't look into this one too much. It seems interesting.
I have a use case, maybe. You know, you have a sword, some kind of weapon in your hand, and you hit someone with it. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, and it hits against other metal, and then it hardens up, so you kind of feel this resistance, you know, like, woof, woof.
Yeah, no, it's definitely useful. It would be useful for games and just kind of feeling things.
And adult entertainment.
Let's move on. You wanted to talk about this one, Peter.
Definitely.
You had this on the list. HoloViz uses...
I want a video.
Let's see. Let's put it up on the
giant robot arms for intense VR motion. Simulated experiences. I mean, if we are considering are we in the future or not, we are in the future with that. Just show the video, and I will describe to the people who listen later on. There are like literally two volunteers sitting in some kind of big ass roboter, and it will lift them and throw them through the space. So I'm pretty sure something like an industrial roboter that you would use usually for
building cars. Yes, it's usually where they bring it from. Actually, these big arms that have
KUKA.
Six axes.
It's a very famous
six axes.
It's a KUKA. It's a company from Germany that was bought by Chinese investors. It's actually a very famous one. Whenever you go to a factory, you will usually see KUKA roboters.
KUKA?
And they're just throwing. Yes, it's KUKA. You will see it on the roboter. It's written there actually. Mm.
For our podcast listeners, I want to ask, do you like the crickets and the sound of the of the forest in the background? Hopefully that doesn't get annoying. I think it adds
me actually. Yeah, I think it's fine, but you asked me to read the comments, and I'm actually not sure how to do that precisely.
Well, you can probably
try my best.
Yeah, you can open up the show and the streams. We are live on Facebook. We're live on Twitter, on Twitch as well. I don't know. This is our first time doing it in VR and big screen. It could potentially become a kind of a platform for us to use to do these podcasts. It could be really easy for guests to be able to join in. So they just pop in here. They put on a headset and they pop into the experience. And then
we
download. It's actually under my account. I didn't make one for Research VR.
Oh, okay,
you can go to like Oz the Wizard or Wizard of Oz, one of those two. And then we are also on Facebook as well.
Yes.
So I would check that. Yeah. Let me check Twitter.
So Facebook, I'm definitely reading.
Oh, cool. We are. It's working on Twitter. Seems like. Yay.
Nice. Wonderful. It's an experiment. It's an experiment to push the limits of podcasting further. And still making sure that we describe everything we see, so even later on when you hear it, you can enjoy it. But the video will also obviously be available for rewatching.
That's right.
Yes. Next topic.
I don't want to talk about this anymore. Let's go. Okay, so this is. Let's talk a little bit about SLAM, about a tracking method.
Just SLAM.
Okay,
it's
not just SLAM.
It's Magic Leap SLAM.
It's Deep SLAM. Oh, look at this. This is like the Donald Trump pinch. Magic Leap has the absolute best. That's a terrible Trump voice. stop that.
Stop it,
magically, researchers reveal deep slap tracking algorithm. Basically, they're talking about creating a really efficient one-camera solution. One camera solution for doing feature detection in between frames at I think 30 plus FPS is what they were claiming.
Yes, and also on average CPU, so not any strong particularly super computer, but actually not optimized hardware, so just a CPU. Yeah,
that's very important because fast, lean, easily running 30 FPS on a single CPU. So basically they're doing feature detection using a convolutional neural network, which I think the CNNs means there's two neural networks that have to, you compare, write the results of one and you check it with a second neural network.
Exactly.
And then that's how you know. That's how you know where you are. And, I mean, what do you want to add to this, Pita?
What I honestly think is the fact that they are finally showing something. I mean, Magic Leap is astonishing. I mean, this is like the first real thing I saw from them. It's not rendered, so actually a real scientific paper that shows that they're going deep into something. And there was recently this, I always forget how to pronounce the company, Avagant Glyph, whatever.
Avagant, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Avagant. And they also showed like some kind of holographic display. And I think The Verge reported on it, and everyone likes it and sees it as a competitor to Magic Leap. And I also think that, in a certain way, the Meta 2 is a competitor to Magic Leap. I would say, however, what this article shows is they're really trying to figure out the problems of SLAM, which is basically understanding where you're in space. And this is something that I have not seen very well working except for Microsoft's HoloLens. So this might be actually something that really pushes them technically far away, and this is maybe what part of their weird API that they are working on. So it's maybe not even the display itself, because other companies can build it too.
I mean, sorry, I'm trying to get this camera. There we go.
Ah, okay.
Sorry,
I was just wondering if you're trying to make some signs.
No. We could totally talk in.
Please stop.
We can totally do some sign language in here. Just bloop, 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 bloop. Exactly. Obviously, so, this is a really important problem to solve, and from what we've seen, I was saying Apple. From what we've seen from Apple with ARKit,
yes,
and also Facebook is doing it now with their own internal app, or the camera inside of the app. You can do SLAM with just one camera, and Apple has really shown that you can do it well. I mean, it works on a 60 FPS level currently. I mean, I had a 7 Plus, an iPhone 7 Plus, so like it has a pretty a high-end spec phone, I'd say. It's not like a low-end phone, but it works really well. And so I don't think Apple's talked about how they do their SLAM, right?
Yes, but Apple has definitely, I'm pretty sure about it, used the accelerometer and the gyroscope and magnetometer, so they have more data. So they, in this article, they just speak about the camera. Apple definitely reuses everything that they can, right?
That's fair.
To make it more precise.
Very cool. But I feel like we should be posting these links.
We will in the show notes.
We need
and check our websites.
That's right. We'll have it in the show notes. If someone wants to help moderate the show and help with like links and posting them in chat, that would be amazing. Contact us. Either tweet at us at ResearchVRcast or on Facebook at ResearchVRpodcast. Just comment below. If you're a fan of the show and you want to help us do these live streams a little bit better, it would be super awesome. The reason why we'd want to do these live is because we can take questions in a real time basis.
Yeah.
Cool. Exactly. Let's chug along here. HP's new commercial VR backpack. You really want to talk about this, don't you? You're such a big fan of VR backpacks.
Yes, I am. However, the one backpack that I own, or that my company is working for, is the one with me today very much.
That was loud.
I'll just play it. Oh, okay. You are a very big fan of wireless VR, and you're pretty.
I like my TP casts. I don't have one, but.
Yeah, but you don't have one. Exactly. And me neither.
But look at this. This is ridiculous. Look at that guy. Look at that.
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, it's keeping your back warm. It's, if your fall, it protects you.
Well, the news here is that HP announced a very for a VR backpack. Beautiful. I'd say it's actually pretty nice. It's a dockable PC. Here, let me put it on the big screen here. It's a big dockable PC that you put onto the backpack part, and then it works. It's like $3,300
and which is fine. Let me tell you one problem.
Check that out. Oh yeah.
Yeah, that is nice rendering. Totally unrealistic. However, let me tell you one problem with the current
future of work. What's up? What's the problem? Is it the monitor?
You can't really unplug them and put them on your back without restarting them. So if you have them in the desktop mode, like you connected the power supply, and then you want to run on battery, you have to power them down and power them up. So if this
backpack, what do you mean? You can't switch from battery power to AC power?
Yes. Not without rebooting or shutting it down. And if this thing solves it, and what they apparently announced with a dock, why not? It's awesome. You know, I just work on my super high density NURBS format, cut files.
The desktop to mobile aspect of it is really interesting.
Exactly.
Because it does allow.
You connect Meta 2 to it.
Sure.
I mean, if you use
that's
anything,
a good idea. Yeah. Actually, that's a great idea. I'm sure. I wonder if they've looked into those. Next story. We're not staying on stories for too long unless we really want to go deep into things.
We are very nervous. It's our first time. We talked about this topic long time ago. I don't remember which.
GVS or galvanic vestibular stimulation. I think it was one of our earliest episodes. Yes, I think it was.
Yes, it was very, very old. And now it seems to work. Do you want to explain it?
Sir, I'll give a little background to what a GVS is. Galvanic vestibular stimulation is basically, they've done research on this where you put electrodes around your ear, which then you can stimulate your vestibular system, which is how you keep balance, right, in your ear. And you can electronically control the G-forces that you can feel on your body or on your head. So technically, what you're supposed to be able to do is get rid of motion sickness if you're in a, let's say, plane, right? So you can actually feel the G-forces of the plane as you fly around. I mean, I think that's a really neat idea. I think if you can actually feel...
It helps with motion sickness.
I think it just helps with full-on immersion, problems.
Yeah, absolutely.
So... That's
also
really
neat. It tickles down the motion sickness, and it kind of looks ridiculous right now, but if they can squeeze it in a nice headset, why not put more electrodes in your head?
Peter, can you explain to us what this four-pole system means? Does that mean four axes, or it looks like they have yaw acceleration?
Can you scroll down? I think they had a description there, actually. There it is. I think four pole means that they have four electrodes.
I see. So with a two-pole GVS setup, an electrode behind each ear is able to induce lateral movement or roll. And three-pole GVS is an additional electrode on the forehead. Okay, so they have two around the ear, one on the forehead. And where's the fourth one? The fourth GVS places two electrodes on the mastoids. And another two
mastoids
on the temples.
Mastoids, I remember. I had to measure them when I was in EEG. Where are they?
So is that...
Mastoids are the points behind your ear, yes.
So, here, let's go back to the camera view here for our viewers. Right back here?
Yes.
Right back here?
Yeah. Like here behind your ears, yeah. Right, I can't really show it, but you can measure them, yeah. I had to measure them for each subject, so yeah.
I guess you can see it right there. Yes,
you can actually. There is an electrode falling, through his ear, and on the other hand,
behind
one on his left
and
the
temples.
Face,
yeah. Doesn't look like there's one on the forehead. Temples, yeah. So it's one, two, three,
not
and
on
four.
The photo.
Yeah. This is interesting because I remember Lucky Palmer, at OC1 or 2, was talking about, how there was such variability between people and the level of how intense you need to have GVS is for each person. For some people, he said that the stimulation would like feel like nothing for some people, and for others you would feel like it's frying their ears or something like scary like that. So that's, he kind of tried to put an end to it when that question was asked, but looks like there's people that are still interested in it. About a year ago, we actually had a story coming out of Mayo Clinic working on something called, do you remember that they also were working on a four-axis GVS system?
I have a small blackout. I don't remember, honestly.
Well, we'll link to it as well. But yeah, it seems like the researchers are really interested in it. We haven't heard anything from them ever since they announced it. Let's see what will come of this.
Exactly. I mean, just imagine you would have a headset with this system, with additional VCI, with eye trackers, with some kind of smell inducing, because there are systems that at least try to induce smell. I tried recently one that was paired with a Gear VR. It was awful, but hey.
With a Gear VR?
Yeah. There was a movie. I watched the Ratatouille, and there was like 12 smells it was trying to induce. There was a big box behind me blowing smells. It was fun. But just imagine combining everything together. You have like a room full of gear worth, I don't know, half a billion, and creates a full Matrix experience. We are coming close to that. At least technically possible.
That's true.
Yes, this is actually a very awesome article.
Moving forward, we have VR-based treatment for vision disorders shows positive results in peer-reviewed study. So this is about the company called Vivid Vision.
So wonderful.
Go for it. Do you want to talk about Vivid Vision?
Yes. So not so much about the company. I actually never heard of them before. I have to check them, but the article describes
Before you move forward.
Yes.
10 episodes ago when we talked to Chris Miranda from Enter VR, his podcast, he actually works for Vivid Vision now, or he has been for like the past year.
Oh, nice.
And yeah, they know a lot about how to use VR eye therapy.
It seems so.
Vision therapy.
I mean, the experiment that they did is really smart design. So the problem here is that the patients they were working with apparently have a dominant eye and a not dominant eye, so the brain kind of ignores one of the eyes.
Most people are
right-eyed,
right? If you're right-handed, you're
that usually...
you
right-eyed. Exactly. Right. You can kind of check it with those finger tricks, but it seems that for certain patients it's unhealthy, so like you're really ignoring one eye mostly, and that's not good because your stereoscopic vision is impaired. And what they did is they used the fact that the HMD is showing you two different pictures to each eye, and they showed the cues for winning the game only to the passive eye. So your brain had to focus on the passive eye.
So what do you mean by cues? As in you, what kind of like visual cues they were getting is what we're seeing on screen, basically? Like
exactly.
Okay, exactly. So they're training the individual to use their non-dominant eye to.
Yes, exactly.
For what exactly?
Yeah.
I mean, I know.
So the brain, uses a non-dominant eye again, and you have proper stereoscopic vision.
So I know Vivid Vision was into correcting lazy eye. That was is this part of the therapy that they're developing for that? Or, I mean, what's the benefit of training your non-dominant eye?
Give me a second. I think they mentioned lazy eyes, yes.
They do.
Yes, lazy.
So the study
calls existing lazy eye and treatments, yeah.
Using eye patch or the dominant eye or blurring it with liquid drops, penalizing. So yeah, it looks like before, without VR, they used to literally blur your eye, your dominant eye, with liquid.
Yeah.
And or like put an eye patch on it. But yeah, it seems like I'm not seeing a big difference between the left and the right eye. It seems like the cues are in both eye, in here at least.
It doesn't show it properly.
Well, it should, right? Because that's the right eye and this is the left eye.
Wait.
So there is a big difference here where that cue is not in the right eye.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, so that's really interesting. What is it called?
But I really enjoyed the article because it. But it shows that you can rewire the brain with VR. You know?
Sure, you can train the brain to be better using VR.
Yes.
That's for sure. Well done. We'll keep our eyes on Vivid Vision for the time being. We should see if we can get him on in here, actually. Either
dominant eyes.
Yeah, lovely. I'll keep my right dominant eye into it. Yeah, maybe we can do an episode with... Stop laughing, it's not that funny.
I'm not laughing.
I would like... What the point I'm trying to make is that I would like to do an episode with them and kind of dive in deeper into it.
And we probably would love to do it too.
And we probably will. Moving on. Yes. This was cool. OptiTrack is making moves in VR. And they have been for a while. Seems like they've made a full body tracking solution by creating these pucks. Oh, does that look familiar? Does that look familiar? Let me just scratch my beard here. Oh, yes. Yeah, so it seems like with the OptiTrack solution, they're an IR-based solution, right? Where basically you have like a ton of cameras around you.
Yes.
On poles. Is it the IR wavelength bandwidth?
I think yes.
It's a very high-end tracking solution. A lot of mocap companies use it. A lot of everything before the Vive tracking. Even for filming cameras for people, mocap, everything. They used to use OptiTrack and Vicon. And so OptiTrack is trying to stay relevant to the Lighthouse tracking, which, I mean, Lighthouse is good, but it's not always the best when it comes to tracking everything. I mean, obviously it's scalable, but... So they are showing off that you can do full body things. I think they had a second story as well. Right, the Rift face pad.
Yes.
We've actually even seen Facebook using OptiTrack in their own... What are you laughing at?
Really?
Yeah. Facebook.
No, I'm really laughing just at the fact that I have a pointer. So to the audience, it's my first time on big screen. I actually really enjoy it. It confuses me a lot.
It's pretty. I mean, it's cool. You can point at things in here, and it works.
Yes, exactly.
So back to the point that I was trying to make. Facebook, when they were showing off their glove trackers, people wearing VR gloves, it was fully OptiTrack based tracking, which just means that they're not completely tied to the two cameras that the Rift uses. You know, like, they're actually not tied to that at all. They're trying to get away from that as quickly as possible.
They want to have a standalone device, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's all going to be inside out based. Coming forward. So yeah, OptiTrack is really good at doing, I've seen a lot of installation based VR use OptiTrack and Rift specifically, and VR backpacks on top of that. And seems like this faceplate is going to make that a little bit easier for manufacturers or vendors to actually be using OptiTrack.
Does it mention a price?
Yes, $749 for the faceplate. Yeah, which,
nothing.
I mean, you'd think $749 is very expensive for a headset accessory, when you're paying, what, how much do you pay for OptiTrack? Like 15, 20 grand or something for a system? $749 is nothing.
I had actually a link in the notes for today's episode from Kickstarter.
I saw the Kickstarter. I didn't see how that was relevant, though. Should we pull it up? Oh, there's a new backpack. There's that new... The Omen backpack.
Because in a certain way, you know, the body tracking that we had when used before is also apparently going to work out with those weird shirts that you can get on Kickstarter. I'm fascinated by the fact that there are more and more people going for this electrode bending technology.
Do you mean
so whoever actually?
Is this what you mean?
No, this is what you sent me.
Terrible.
No, there's a second one. Oh, there's a second one. Yes, there's a second one. That was exactly for the fact that it's terrible. I wanted to discuss how terrible it is.
Let's see what this is. Oh my god, it's so loud. Sorry. Jesus, killed my eyes. Let me...
It's marketing. So, what we see right now, to anyone who's not seeing, there's
a girl
in the video putting up... Yeah, but I mean, some people will listen later, right?
We do have a podcast as well.
So there are people wearing a weird jacket.
Or it looks like a...
That has electrodes inside.
Right.
Jumper?
Sure, you can call it a bodysuit.
A bodysuit, basically, yeah. It has some kind of device on top of it that they claim has just Bluetooth 2.1, which I don't believe. It sounds very old. But the technology works basically exactly the same as the Manus VR gloves, where you have electrodes that you bend, you basically stretch when you move yourself, and it changes the resistance. And through that and machine learning, as they claim.
Interesting. So they're not how you move. They're not doing reference points on the body to track.
Nope.
They're using the quality of bending of fabric, right? The qualities of bending. Exactly. Okay, that's an interesting approach. I haven't seen that. I wonder how accurate it could be. Oh, there seems like there's a big latency between what he's doing and what the character is doing.
Latency can come through the fact that, you know, they kind of suck at software level right now.
How much are they charging for this? Let's see, because there's a good amount of body suits, like cheaper mocap, yes, including Perception Neuron, including the Rococo suit, yes, including a few other ones that we keep seeing at these conventions.
As you say, there's really a big delay. I think they want $500 or $600 on Kickstarter. But it's definitely a developer kit, so don't get it if you're just a consumer.
Who's their target audience? Like, what do they want to do with this?
Oh gosh, who knows?
I'm just skeptical.
You're asking questions that, I'm skeptical as well. I just like the idea that someone scaled up the Manus glove basically to the whole body.
So what do you mean? So the Manus gloves are also based on stretch fabric?
Absolutely. You have electrodes on each finger, and when you stretch the finger, it changes the resistance. And then they have basically the gyroscope, or basically detection of the thump. In addition, I think in the newest version, I didn't try the newest version, I think, but they definitely use electrode stretching method.
Okay.
Changing resistance.
Okay, that's cool.
Maybe an approach. I mean, I don't know. Maybe that's the future. Maybe not. Don't give them too much money.
Oh, okay. I'm looking at the comments on my phone, for Facebook at least.
Oh.
Peter, you
phone. Okay.
Totally forgotten about our audience. Falco Zint, you're still watching, he says that the XMGs are a better choice. Those are the VR backpacks that Peter uses.
Exactly. I use them, I love them, and I don't want to say anything bad. Hi, Falco. Great that you tune in on every episode I'm doing.
Yeah, thank you, Falco. He's also asking if we can turn off the background noise. Unfortunately, I don't think we can in this environment. If we change to a different environment, we win. But we'll do that for the next episode. I just wanted to see how a campfire would do. I mean, we might even make a special one for podcasts later down the line. That would be really cool.
Yeah.
Like a special research VR cast, like, set and everything, and, like, have the logo in the middle. It'll look really official.
It'd be nice.
Let's move on to next story. What else do we have here? Blah, blah, blah. I saw NVIDIA announced some interesting things.
Yes. This is lovely.
Dude, they do such a bad job of, like, explaining things. Their marketing.
But it's super tough to explain it.
I guess. I had to read this over and over again, and it seems like Ian, who has written the article, did less of the writing and more of just like, look, I'm just going to copy-paste the way they try to explain things.
But I mean, come on, how easy it is to explain light fields and different ways of seeing objects in front of you. It's just super confusing. I had to re-listen to our own light field episode 3 times, so I finally understand what it is.
Yeah, Dom, that
was a very good one.
That was a really
good one. It's a very good one, but I still was not able to understand it that quickly.
Are you talking about the one with Ryan Dam from Visby that we talked about light fields? Your episode with Dominic from NVIDIA.
No. Definitely yours. Mine was lame. I mean, not lame, but mine was not that deep.
Yeah, you guys didn't talk about light fields as much. So, going back to this, it seems like NVIDIA Research is trying to fix the vergence and accommodation problem of your eyes of VR. So, basically, now we've talked about this before. We'll quickly explain what it is. Let's go back to this camera here. Currently in VR headsets, you can only focus using vergence, which is basically, in our headsets, your eyes are focused at infinity, but like if there's a close object, your two eyes can shift and look at them, but it still doesn't exactly feel like the same type of focus. You also can't, like, things don't go blurry when they're out of focus in VR yet, because you're just not focusing that way.
Not yet.
This seems to fix that. Can you move your screen, sir? You're blocking the audience.
I'm trying to read the comments from the mighty audience.
So previously, before, we've talked a little bit about the Avogant Glyphs mixed reality light field display that they were showing. We had a great video about that, actually. But what NVIDIA is trying to do is, seems like they're using some interesting terminology. Let's see what they were calling it.
Yes, they are. Very cryptic.
They have two things. The one is using a transparent holographic back projection screen. What does that mean, Peter? What is a holographic back projection?
I think what it means is that you have some kind of screen in front of you, and the projection is behind it, projecting on the screen, and it's holographic because it's transparent.
Right. So it's a reflection onto a like a Fresnel.
Yes.
Right. It looks like.
Yes. Something like that. Yeah.
Right, and then.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that this is like the screen, and then the projection is somewhere here, projecting on top of it.
I'm just wondering how they're adjusting for different focal planes. It doesn't seem like they talk about that much. They also talk a little bit about
not really
adding chromatic aberration. I didn't think this was something you'd want to add. I thought this was something you'd want to get rid of. But it says this administration makes use of the research in evidence to support the idea that our brains use what a photographer would call chromatic aberration, causing colored fringes to appear on the edges of an object to help understand where an image is in space. So they're saying you get some kind of chromatic aberration around objects, and I guess light kind of bends in a certain way that would do that. I don't understand this paragraph that they're saying.
I have no idea what they're talking about.
I think we know a fair bit about
it. Sounds very strange.
Vision, but I haven't heard about chromatic aberration in your real eye.
Me neither.
Right?
Me neither. No.
NVIDIA marketing team, do better. I want to understand what you guys are doing here.
Please include like a PDF with 20 pages of scientific paper we can read and understand.
That would be nice.
Because maybe this we'll nonsense come... is tough.
The second demonstration.
As long as I have.
Let's go back to the big screen. Second demonstration, Membrane VR, a collaboration between University of North Carolina. They use a deformable membrane mirror for each eye that in a commercial system can be adjusted based on where a gaze tracker detects a user is looking. So deformable membrane mirror, that's how you have a variable focal plane. So I don't know how it is a variable membrane. They didn't talk about that either, but I can understand the principle
behind how it all works. It looks like, I don't know, do you remember this other holographic display they showed like 3-4 years ago at ZGRAPH that was showing you different focal perspectives, basically merging screens?
The one with Stanford?
Seems like yeah, exactly. And this seems to be like the development of it. I don't know. It looks super geeky.
Yes, indeed. Well, I think that's all the news we had for that we wanted to cover, at least. Exactly. But yeah, back to... Oh, dude, why did you pin that comment? back to the podcast here. I just want to say hi to everyone that's watching and has joined, that is missing us, because we've been gone for a little bit. It's a little bit of housekeeping.
But I had the reason.
We'll do a little bit of housekeeping now. Talk a little bit about the podcast, where we are, what we've been up to. This concludes the news section of the podcast.
Section. Yes.
I should check Twitch as well. See where we are with everything.
Yeah, I will definitely be next time better prepared to open different tabs and train myself as Oculus to be faster reading comments, or maybe hack myself as another screen in my Oculus so I can, with one eye, the dominant one, read the comments, and the non-dominant receive the VR.
That's funny. Well, let's talk a little bit about what we've been up to.
Exactly. You have been on a very interesting trip, haven't you?
Yeah, I have been. Let's see. And get the camera. Oh, yeah, we can put it back to where it was. Sorry.
I have to tell Aaron that he's right now not in this virtual room. It looks very, very, how would I say it? suspicious. And I have a total Matrix-style feeling that the world is around me is fake. Like,
it's, well, it
like,
is.
I know it's fake. It's just, it is, but just, it's just, like, I don't know, it feels super intense, like. And I didn't experience VR as it stands as right now. It's like my first time spending with someone in VR.
Right.
Like an hour maybe already. And like trying to interact also with computers and talking about topics and knowing that someone is listening. It's overwhelming. I think VR finally reached my heart deep down.
You're saying this experience right now, yeah. this moment
yes.
is a very significant.
It's one of the deepest VR experiences I ever had, honestly.
Yeah, no, I think... social experiences in VR are very, very yes. significant. I want to talk a little bit about Echo Arena and how incredible of an experience, how polished it is, and how it does so many things right. Some of the things that we've talked about here in terms of cognitive load, in terms of presence, that how presence-inducing high cognitive load tasks are... and as well as just other layers of polish. Sorry, I keep scratching my nose and you can see that because I'm holding the touch. One thing that Rift needs to figure out is how to like not have little hairs sticking out and touching noses. It gets so scratchy and itchy. I just keep playing with my nose.
Yes. Yes. Back I have the same problem, actually.
Yeah, you can understand. Armenians have big noses and it's hard to do that. Back to the topic at hand. We were Echo Arena is an incredible experience where basically it's like soccer in space, except it's not soccer, it's frisbee that you have to fly around to in 3D and grab frisbee and throw it in. But the reason why it's so good is because somehow they got the IK, the inverse kinematics, to look really, really, yeah. really good. They got the movement system to be excellent because you can grab things and propel yourself off, and then you have thrusters to kind of adjust your you know vector, and then you can also grab other people and like slingshot off of them, so transfer of energy. Unfortunately, they don't slow down, which is an interesting choice because I guess that just kind of keeps things going quickly. But like, there's a lot of really interesting physics that you can use in there. And the game is just so... <This guy>. The game is just so immersive because you're just constantly like flying back and forth between the field. And I like this part about it, that after you score, kind of like in soccer, you can kind of like run and do a flare move, you know, like, oh, like put your hands up in there, like take your shirt off, something stupid like that, and then all the other players come and like hug you. That's essentially what happens in this game. Is like as soon as people score, they like start flying, they like do a flip and they're like pew pew pew, and then all the whole team or the enemy team comes up to them and like either congratulates them or like punches them, or you know, it's like really, 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 really cool because it has the same interactions that you would see a real sport having. Love that. Yeah. And it's just been the one kind of experience that I've been wanting to go back to and re-experience. It's fantastic. It's free on the Oculus Store. You can even try it on a Vive using Revive. Downloaded Echo Arena. That's really cool.
Nice.
Another thing I want to talk about is Chroma Labs. It's not out yet, but it is a trip and a half. Let me see if I can find the Steam page for it. Chroma Lab. They've teased it on Reddit before. Where is it? Store page. It is basically a particle. You mess around with particles in VR, and you put music to it, and it's all audio reactive, and it's just like it's kind of like an acid trip in VR. It's kind of incredible. No real science research VR reason why I want to talk about it. I think it's just a really hypnotizing experience. It's not out yet, but it will be very soon. Oh, Sarah.
Yeah, she's just commenting on the podcast.
Oh, nice. Hey, Sarah, Lisa Vogel. Good to see you.
Yeah.
I guess we were kind of talking about the summer a little bit. I did do some traveling. I ended up going to like Iceland, Sweden, Germany, Croatia, Armenia, most of it solo with myself and my drone. And I went and visited you for a little bit in Germany, and you came to Berlin. Had a great time there. So we haven't really had as much time to do any podcasting, fortunately, but we're back.
And come on, we deserve the summer break. So
we do, we do. We didn't really. It was an impromptu break, but it was much needed, I'd say.
Yeah. I mean, we're here just for fun, you know, talking about the newest news and making sure people know interesting things. But also in the summer, usually not much is happening anyway. So
yeah, I'd say
it's kind of.
Yeah, I mean, it was a really awesome project that I went on to Armenia. With the realities.
You did some awesome shooting with a drone. It's ridiculous.
Lots of videos.
Anyone just Google his name and check it out.
It's on Vimeo, actually.
I'll
link to the videos on Vimeo. I did a lot of drone kind of videos, but the exciting part, actually, is that I went to Armenia with the realities.io people. David Fitzwalder. He's like one of the biggest experts in photogrammetry, and yes, their app is free. Definitely. On Steam. You should try it out if you have a VR headset, and it's just like the most incredible 3D scans of environments that you can walk through in VR.
Yes.
And we went and captured.
You literally feel like you're there.
Yeah, they're very good
you
at
really
just like
feel
capturing.
Like you're there because the texture is perfect. You know, the texture is literally as it would be. The meshes look incredibly good, and it's all made from photos. So it's, I don't know, it's mind-blowing. I don't know how they're doing it, but it's ridiculous.
There's some clever like lighting effects as well at certain places, like God rays and dust particles in places where it really gives some life to the environment. So we went and captured these really, really old Armenian heritage sites, and you know, it's kind of a passion project that I was going to do by myself with my own drone, but we ended up going with like tons of drones and cameras and capturing these places. I don't have too much to show yet, but more on that coming. So that was really, really awesome project that I was in. Peter, anything that you want to share from your side of life?
My side of life. You know, just going on with my life. I meet from time to time awesome people in this rainy Germany. Sometimes, you know, people come from US to visit. Sometimes I'm in Berlin seeing some nice people. And actually, there were a lot of VR conferences, and there are going to be more conferences, which I hopefully can manage to score one or another very interesting interview. I've definitely recorded two on the Digility, which will be at some point released. We need just to process them, and in between the live episodes, we'll definitely push them out. And actually, looking at all the huge amount of industrial-oriented startups, but also game startups, and in general VR-focused interest, it's highly fascinating. There was recently even an article, I think an upload, about 450 VR startups in Europe or something like that. It's a kind of VR-found company, I think, found it out or did a research. And so the economy is growing, and that means also that the community is growing. And for me, the community of the VR, you know, experiences like so far has been like the most interesting part, because people are just super enthusiastic. And that means I'm usually even more on the go, you know, visiting more events, meeting more people, which
you do to a lot of these events, lots of VR conferences.
But it's awesome to meet everyone.
Yeah, it is.
It's crazy.
I met a good amount of fans at just random, just listeners of these podcasts. Yeah, I mean, it's awesome. The Research VR community is pretty widespread, like spanning continents and countries, and lots of basically all the major and smaller VR companies that at least I know of, like at least either they've heard of the podcast or they've like active listeners to it.
I'm incredibly also trying to evangelize for it. So I was recently giving a lecture for 40 engineers, and the engineers study engineering in Paderborn, but they actually have a class on VR and IR for engineering. And I had the honor to give the last lecture for them, you know, just show the possibility where the future is going. And I obviously also, you know, made advertisement for the podcast. So if anyone from them is listening, you know, welcome, listen to more. And in general, spread the word. Right. I mean, we're just two people. If you think that what we are doing is at some point interesting and you like it, don't only rate us on iTunes, but also spread the word. Make sure that people are aware of it. And also, please tell everybody at some point that it's not important to listen to every episode. Listen to those that are interesting for you.
Sure, yeah.
There's like no pressure. You know, well, it happens to a lot of people. They open a podcast, there are already 40, 50 episodes. They think, oh, I need to listen through every one of those.
Well, no, yeah, it depends. Depends. I think we try to title things so that it's, you know, if you want, exactly. If it interests you per topic, you can go into it.
If you have an interest in, pick it up. If you like it, listen to them all.
Hopefully, we'll be doing a lot more of these down the line. And I think on a more regularly paced thing, hopefully I will have a regularly paced day that we can even stream these so people can, you know, kind of schedule them and drop in. You can either on Facebook, Twitter, or Twitch on the podcast side. So if you are a listener of the podcast and you're subscribed to it, follow our channels and you'll be able to see this happening live. I know on Twitter you can turn on live notifications. On Facebook you can turn on also live notifications and just get notified. So anything else you want to cover, Peter? I think this has been a good little reintroduction.
I really like it.
You like it?
Yeah, exactly. Cool. That was my point. Yeah. I'm really fascinated because, to be honest, I really got used to speaking in front of a mic. And I really don't have any emotions, like strong emotions, when I have a guest or I'm talking with you over Skype record things. But this episode today made me, I don't know, considering that we should do more of those live things and more of the live things in VR, because it triggers a lot of emotions in me and makes me very interested in it.
It's a good way to put it.
It's tough to describe, I don't know.
It's a good way to put it, Peter. Triggers lots of emotion. Alrighty, let's do it. Where's our outro? Where's our outro?
Goodbye, everyone.
There's our outro
and
music.
See you soon.
Oh, yeah.
I know.
It's planned.